What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to another episode of the number one sports podcast in the Upper Metro Detroit era. It's Teeing It Up with C and V. I'm your host, Connor. As always, with the V and C of C and V, Vladdy. What's going on, man? Back in the role on these Mondays, playoff hockey, playoff basketball, summer, nice weather, all good things, all good vibes.
Yeah, not much really noteworthy, just kind of trudging along. As you say, we're getting into the nice weather. I don't have to wear my winter coat to work anymore. Can kind of, when I leave the gym, I can just kind of walk out in shorts and a t-shirt. I don't have to put on any kind of long sleeves again, so that's great. Been golfing a little bit. Kind of same old, you know, just a classic intro to Michigan summer, I guess. Nothing really out of the ordinary. How about you?
Yeah, man. Finished up school actually tomorrow if you're listening on Tuesday, but today for us recording, and it felt nice. I limped into the finish line. Today's final, I'll be honest, was not my best performance, but I think I got what I needed to get done. And now I joined the 9 to 5 for the summer, which, again, I said it last year, I'll say it again this year. For me, being a grad school student, I actually kind of I'm looking forward to not having to come home from work. I do work part-time right now, and having to worry about school, or come home from a long day of school and have to worry about more school after work. But to be able to kind of just go back to I don't want to say a normal routine, but a normalish routine. So that's kind of all I have personal enough stuff wise. I'm also pretty sick of golf these days. I just thought I'd share to those on the podcast. I had a stretch where I had 3 birdies in a row on Saturday, I made a 20 footer, a 30 footer, and a 40 footer on back to back to back holes.
What'd you shoot?
I shot an 84 because I went double, double, triple to end the round. So it wasn't exactly, on the front nine, I was 2 over going on into 9, and I got an 8 on a par 4 too.
So basically, the sub 80 grind continues, but you are knocking on the door.
I'm knocking on the door. I just can't quite, I'd say, piece together enough good holes in one round to truly be that kind of golfer though yet.
Fair enough.
But yeah. So today we're going to have a mixed bag again. We've obviously got the playoff preview, which we'll kind of update as we move into the second round here of both the NBA and NHL playoffs. And then because there's not much else right now in the world of sports, I could bore you with about the 18 and 14 Tigers and how they're the mediocrity of the league, but I don't think people want to listen to that. So we're going to kind of start doing in implementing kind of bigger picture mixed bag topics today. We're going to go over NIL. Our perspectives as a fan. I'm going to give some kind of legal perspective as far as where it's going legally, and then kind of how we see it playing out, / how we can kind of improve on the situation. And that is, I guess, college sports at this point, not just NIL, but that's kind of in conjunction with the transfer portal, you know, TV rights, conference realignment, all that is in college sports right now.
Yep. Where are we starting?
So,
NBA?
Yeah, where do you want to start?
I'll go first.
Okay.
So NBA, we're into the second round. I guess I'll kind of recap the end of the first for the series that ended after last week, and then preview a little bit of the second rounds. Cavs and Magic. I mean, I mentioned it last week. This is a series that I don't think anybody has seen a single second of. Made it to Game 7, but nobody knew there was a Game 7 because no one ever watched this. I guess the home team won every game. Cool. Cavaliers win, and they get to get killed by Boston next. 76ers, Knicks. I talked about this last week, how Joel Embiid was on fraud watch, and it's beyond watch. He just, like, the most overrated superstar, quote-unquote, if you will, in American sports. I don't see how you can be a superstar if you've never made it past the second round of your playoffs. And look, I understand the Knicks play hard. They've got kind of a good, well-rounded team with kind of the Villanova boys and then some good bench players. They don't have superstars. Julius Randle's not hurt, and not that Julius Randle's some savant himself. Did I say Julius Randle is not hurt, or I said
He said he is not hurt.
Okay, well, pardon my
He's
stroke.
hurt.
Julius Randle has not played since January, so
Yeah.
the second best player on the Knicks was not there. And while Jalen Brunson, as good as he is in this playoff run and as much of a heater as he's going on, I don't think he's some top 10 player in basketball either. So if Joel Embiid is going to sit there as the best player on the floor, or what's supposed to be the best player on the floor, to lose to that New York Knicks team, that's a joke. And I mean, the excuse that started, oh, but he's hurt. He's always hurt. That's part of being a superstar. Ask Zion Williamson how good being available for 20 games a season will take you, and what that does for your stature in the league.
It's a shame too with Embiid because he actually played well for a good chunk of these like the games in this series. But you mentioned like part of being a superstar is winning and being able to close out games, which he notoriously kind of ran out of gas in a lot of those games. And it was if it was anybody, it was Tyrese Maxey getting it done at the in the fourth quarter for them.
And yes, he had no help. Tobias Harris went to Cancun 2 weeks ago. I understand that.
For
But
25 million a year.
if you're a superstar, if you're the MVP, if you're the guy that people claim is Mr. This, oh my God, and the most skilled center of all time, and oh my God, and oh my God, if you're going to sit there and take all the flowers, you have to deliver, and he doesn't deliver. So Joel Embiid is the most overrated athlete in America. Until someone does some stupid shit in the football season, and then he becomes the most overrated athlete. But for now, that's the guy who's kind of taking the reins.
Be the
That
lead
was
star in
76ers.
Canada.
What?
They said they're lucky the Leafs are in Canada, otherwise they'd have something to say about that.
I'm sure you'll get a chance to talk about that.
Yeah.
But Pacers Bucks. Pacers took care of the injured Bucks in six. Cool. What am I supposed to do when one of the better players in the world doesn't
Yo.
play at all? Can't do much about it. Lakers Nuggets, kind of a classic Lakers Nuggets end to that series. Lakers lead, Lakers lose lead, Nuggets win. This is now going to begin the quote unquote summer of bronze storylines that we always have of, oh, is he retiring? Oh, is he leaving? Oh, is he this? Oh, is he that? Oh, are we going to draft this kid to make him feel good? We'll deal with that when we get there. Nuggets were just a better team, and the Lakers couldn't do anything about it. Celtics Heat, nothing more to say other than the Celtics. I don't know how they ever dropped. Actually, I do know how they dropped a game. The Heat hit, I think, 23 threes in game two. They quickly showed that that was a fluke of a game. Mavs Clippers, Dallas wins games five and six and sends the Clippers home. You're going to have another offseason of questions for the Clippers about, oh, is this core? Can they do it? Kawhi Leonard, never healthy. Paul George passed his best. I'm not even going to consider Russell Westbrook a star anymore. James Harden, Mr. I am the system, but my system fucking sucks. So I guess they can figure that stuff out before moving to the new arena. Pelicans Thunder, cool series. Pelicans get swept. Great. Woo! Moving on to the kind of the round two games. You had the Timberwolves and the Nuggets. They're the only kind of game that, or the only series that's played so far. As at the time of recording, the T-Wolves stole game one on the road, and Anthony Edwards picked up right where he left off. I also do want to highlight, I think what the Timberwolves have is something that you kind of need to be able to play against Denver, and that's length. Between Gobert, Cat, and Naz Reid, they have three guys who can just rotate consistently on Jokic, and he just gets not necessarily worn down, because he's the best player in basketball. He's still going to get his. But it takes him. It's not easy for him the way it was with the Lakers, where if it wasn't AD on him, nobody could touch him. So I think that's a very interesting kind of counterpoint. I think Rudy Gobert, that defensive specialty, which I've kind of laughed at him before for his lack of ability on the offensive end, and kind of not to say disregard the defensive, but kind of overlooked him. And it really showed in game one. You kind of watch some of the plays where he's guarding two people at once, essentially, with his movement, with just his presence, what people have to do in terms of respecting him on the court. So that was cool. We'll see if the Timberwolves can keep it up. Pacers Knicks should be a fun battle of teams that try hard. I guess give me the Knicks as the higher seed, having home court advantage. Celtics Cavs. Celtics in five, I guess. I'll be nice to the Cavs and give them a game, but the Celtics are clearly a better team, and that's even without Kristaps Porzingis. And not to mention, now that I feel like the East is so bad, it's It's like,
Exactly what I was, my next question was going to be,
yeah,
is just
I
like, it
mean, you
doesn't it
can.
feel, the East just kind of feels like it's the Celtics and let's just get there already.
Yeah, and I guess that that's actually very good for him because, like I said, with Kristaps Porzingis nursing that injury, he's kind of not necessarily. I'm not going to say game time to say he can't play for the next 2 weeks, but thankfully they don't need him to. They're just that good without him, and that much better than everyone else still without him. So he'll get healthy for the Eastern Conference Finals, and then the last series, the Mavs and the Thunder. This will probably be my favorite series to watch, I think, just because I think that you kind of have the Shai Gilgeous-Alexander Young Thunder team going up against just kind of the Luka-Kyrie duo. I didn't watch as much of the Thunder in the first round as I wanted to, so I'm still relatively new to their kind of playoff basketball, if you will. But I'm going to watch more of it, and you know what? Just because I'm a Luka fan, give me the Mavs in six.
I am also kind of becoming a huge Luka guy. And I don't even know why. He's not even like the most likable player in the world. It's
No,
just
he
like
really isn't.
he's, yeah, but I don't know. I something there's something about the guy just loving his beers after the game and doesn't really care if he's in shape and is just very skilled at the game of basketball that just like is like, well, I guess you could say Jokic is kind of the same thing. He looks like your milkman. Like body type wise, I mean, besides the fact he's 7 feet tall, but I don't know. I hate to say this because I do think there are, I mean, you mentioned the Timberwolves matchup and what that'll present for the Nuggets, and it looks like the Thunder are will have something to say about it. Same with the Mavs, and that the West, there are teams in the West, but it does kind of feel like, I think, and granted, I could be ahead of myself on the Nuggets. Just because they played the Lakers, who they just absolutely they get to they take them out for a walk and let them shit on the fire hydrant, so to speak. But it does feel like this is going to be Celtics Nuggets to me, no matter what. So.
Yeah, I still leave the West as kind of a wide open. I can honestly see the Nuggets, the Timberwolves, or the Mavericks winning the West. I don't see the Thunder. I think that they're just maybe too inexperienced, but you know they are the one seed. So I think the West will be very fun to watch. It's unfortunate we're on the East Coast and most of their games will be tipping off at 10 or 10:30 at night on weekdays when we got work the next day, but I'll watch what I can without compromising my ability to function the next day at work.
The other thing I wanted to add or kind of ask slash add is the Bucks. Obviously no chance this year with no Giannis and no Lillard for most of the series. But you mentioned the Clippers and how they're kind of in this weird purgatory of what they do. A lot of question marks for the Bucks. Chris Middleton's an older player. I actually, to be honest, Giannis and Dame, while being superstars, are not young chickens anymore either. But that group really didn't get a chance to prove themselves either way. And as far as should we stick with them? Is this what we can get over the hump with? We don't know because they weren't together in the playoffs, let alone most of the season. We fired our coach this year, so clearly something's up with that. So maybe we do move on from them. I guess, was it enough of a sample size to really make an informed decision?
So I would say this. Let me just. I'm Googling. Okay. So first off, if you're the Milwaukee Bucks, get rid of Doc Rivers. That is the most fraudulent coach in basketball. I don't want to say in America because I'm sure I'm overlooking something, but Doc Rivers is the most fraudulent coach in basketball. So get him out of there to start with. Second of all, I know there was the whole Damian Lillard conundrum where he basically tried to force his way to Miami to the point where the NBA was looking into them for tampering. And then I don't know if you saw some of his quotes during the season. It was funny. He's like, "Yeah, this is really boring. I go to basketball and then I come home." And it's more, everyone was just like, "Yeah, this guy wanted to be in Miami nightlife so bad and ended up in Milwaukee."
I
But
was like, dude, you were in Portland for a decade. How much worse could that, or how much better was that?
I think maybe that was part of his issue is he wanted to go to a place that actually has last call after maybe 10 p.m. and
Yeah.
I guess it didn't work out for him. But no, you have to run it back with that group of players. Just get rid of Doc Rivers is the one change I would make, and obviously get healthy. Like you said, they never had a chance. But I don't know. They're in an interesting situation. It's just like you said, they're not exactly they're not all in their mid-20s and gearing up for some kind of decade-long run, let's say the way the Thunder are. So I agree with your kind of thought process of like, could you lump them in with the Clippers kind of situation-wise?
Yeah, and you sacrifice. I mean, what we did see is you sacrifice defense, which was kind of part of the identity of the team that won a
Yes.
title, 3 years ago now, 2, 3 years ago, 2021.
2021, yeah, when they beat
Yeah.
the Suns.
Right. Anything else on the NBA?
Unless I'm missing something, no, I don't think I am. So yeah, I'll turn it over to you for some hockey.
Hockey, hockey, hockey. What was a relatively, I'd say, lame first round had its moments this weekend, I think, with two really good game sevens. A lot of these series weren't close, which is very rare for the NHL. You had a lot of good games within that, but not a lot of good series, actually. For instance, where I'm going to start, Florida beats Tampa in 5 games. Again, pretty much all those games were close. I know they won that last game like 4 or 5 to nothing, but they scored. It was 1-0 with like 4 minutes left in the game, 5 minutes left in the game. Tampa, lots of question marks moving forward. Obviously, they went back to back and have been to the playoffs every year since. But this is their second year in a row being out in the first round. Steven Stamkos, the face of that franchise for the last 15 years, is a UFA. He's 35 years old. Lots of question marks in terms of what kind of term does he want? What kind of money does he want? Can the Lightning afford it? And you start to see more and more of this core that was there for the Cup dwindle down to now. It's literally just Stamkos, if you sign him, Braden Point, Kucherov, Hedman, and Cernak from that team. So a lot of question marks moving forward for them.
Can I say one
Florida's
thing?
going to play Boston. So.
I was gonna say, well, while we're talking about Stamkos, I mean, maybe this is just because of Yzerman and the Wings always kind of looking for star power. I heard slight rumors or talks of like the Wings would be in on Stamkos if and when he does hit kind of free agency. Is there kind of thought, I guess, have you heard similar things or thoughts on that?
I have heard similar things. I'm not sure. Again, most of it is like rumor boys Twitter stuff I see. It makes a lot of sense. He'd be playing probably a second line center role. I mean, the guy still had 40 goals this year. I know you talked with some of my hockey people that are in the loop with hockey, and they call him a power play merchant, and say all his points this year came off the power play. I don't care. The guy still had 40 goals and 80 points this year. He's still effective. Now, if he's going to sit there and want, 7+ million like he was earning, I don't know if you necessarily can afford that if you're the Red Wings, given who they're going to have to sign this summer. But if he's willing to, it's kind of like the Kane situation. It's all what does he want? Does he want to take a discount to stay in Tampa? Does he want to take a discount to go play on a contender or a playoff team like the Red Wings should be next year, for say the next 2 or 3 years? It's all going to be, the issue is who's going to give him the term he wants. Obviously, at 35 years old, he's going to want 3+ years. I'm not so sure, especially Yzerman, given the fact he's kind of notorious for not wanting to give term. That would be kind of the only thing I see really hindering that getting done, is Yzerman not being one to give out term to older players in the past. So Florida's going to play the Bruins. That was the soap opera series of the entire thing. You had Willie Nylander not having an undisclosed injury for the first 3 games of the series. Turns out to be migraines. You had him coming back in game 4 and yelling at Mitch Marner on the bench, and Mitch Marner throwing his gloves on the bench. The Leafs were down 3-1 at that point. Then you had Austin Matthews go out. You had a goaltending change. What happens? The Leafs tied the series up at 3. Then just hours before game 7, Joseph Woll, who had played games 5 and 6, turns out he pulled a hamstring on trying to stop a goal the Bruins scored in game 6, to make a 2-0 game 2-1 with 0.001 seconds left. So he got injured stopping a meaningless goal at the end of game 6. Tough blow. He was great. Both those games were 1-0 and 2-1. So he was a huge, huge chunk of the reason for getting them to that game seven. You had no Austin Matthews in games five and six. You had between game six and seven, the Bruins coach call out their star player, David Pastrnak, and basically said he's done nothing for us this series. He needs to do more. And then you get a great 1-1 game with the Bruins tied up with about 10 minutes left. And who scores the overtime winner after getting called out? The Breadman. I'm sorry, the Breadman's wrong, European. The Pasta Man. David Pastrnak gets it done. Sends the Bees to the series. Likely the end of the core four in Toronto. Well, obviously, the Bruins move on and play the Panthers. So that was the premier. That and I'll get into the other one, but we're kind of the premier series. The Rangers swept since we last talked. They might have already swept since before that. They also took game one last night against Carolina, who beat the Islanders in five. Wasn't much to say about that series. The Islanders blew two-goal leads in that series. Never going to win doing that. Rangers Carolina is going to be a great series. The way they played that game last night, it's going to go back and forth. Different style games, so it should be an interesting series. In the West, Colorado, after getting scorched for seven goals in game one, goes on to win the next four. They look like they're on a mission with Nathan MacKinnon and boys and Cale Makar. They're going to play Dallas, who, after going down 2-0, comes back and gets a huge game seven win yesterday. Sorry, Saturday. Beat the Vegas Golden Knights. I said that was going to be a dogfight of a series. It was. It was every bit as good as advertised. Interesting for Vegas. I mentioned that they did the salary cap LTIR thing where they were like $20 million over the salary cap with their roster for the playoffs. It didn't work out for them getting an eight seed and having to play the second best team in the West in Dallas. Probably should have maybe tried a little harder to get more wins in the regular season, not just slip into the playoffs. Maybe they could have had a different result there, but still was a hell of a series. Dallas, Colorado is going to be great. And then the last matchup, which I think is probably the only second round matchup that could be less than six games, is Vancouver and the Oilers. The Oilers made quick work of the Kings, another team that looks like they're on a mission. You just question whether they can get the goaltending to take them all the way this year. Vancouver, after losing their goaltender, and I said that they might be done given the kind of Team of Destiny vibes that Nashville is giving off. They get their superstars to turn it around. Elias Pettersson, after being asleep in the first two games, turns it around. They win the last three of four and take that one in six games. So, like I said, I see all three of the ones besides Vancouver and Edmonton being six-plus game series. I think I'd like to see Florida over the Bruins, I think. I think the Canes get it done over the Rangers despite losing game one. Oilers, I like in five, and I am going to take Colorado over the Stars after they played a heavy, heavy series, the Stars, that is. So that is the Stanley Cup playoffs as of May 6.
I love it. Get
All
into
right.
the meat and potatoes of the week, kind of our main topic.
Yeah, I like that, the meat and the potatoes. The mixed bag, substantive topic, NIL and kind of the history and state of, I can't really call it history, I guess, since it's 3 years old, but I guess I'll start by, do you agree with the premise of NIL, like what it's supposed to be?
I do. I
Okay.
guess, like you say, in a pure form, in an idealistic viewpoint, I do believe that these athletes should be able to make money. It was long overdue. It had become way too much of a business over the last decade for them to sit there and continue to be, oh, well, we give you a $4,000 scholarship, so you need to sit down and get in line there, boy. I hated that take. I've always been on the side that the players should be able to make money off of them, kind of off of their name, image, and likeness, kind of what you say. I've said it before, the way the NCAA implemented this was just like a pouting bitch. Oh, well, we didn't get our way, so now we're gonna fuck it up as much as possible so we can sit there and tell everybody that we told you so. And it's unfortunate that's happening. It's unfortunate they had to be kind of petulant about it. And it's unfortunate we have to discuss things like this and we have to see college sports basically get torn apart to get rebuilt. But that's where we are.
I asked that question. Your answer is a perfect kind of lead into kind of the legal background I kind of wanted to just give our listeners to real quick before we dive into it, what it is today. It obviously starts with the Alston case in 2021, where basically, on face, right, like the NCAA hides behind this concept of amateurism and that if you're an amateur, you cannot be paid. It's like the same thing where a lot of Olympic athletes have. It's a similar type thing. That's what the NCAA has kind of hid behind their whole life. The Supreme Court said, no, that's BS, basically. You can't do that. You can't hide behind advertising, which I agree with. And I think we both agree with. I think you have a property interest as a human being to your name, image, and likeness. Like it's borderline part of your body, right? Like that high of a property interest I have, and you literally profiting off who you are as a person, what you look like, what you do, your likeness, I think can't be taken away from you by any contract, which is essentially what these are contracts for a scholarship. Where I think there's going to be, where I think I actually think it's gone too far, and where it's going to go, where there'll be employees at some point, is I don't necessarily think that NIL means that they should be given salaries or that they're not, there's no consideration for them going to school at this point because they are given. I think my point is I want to separate NIL from any salary-based or just any base payment for being on the team, right? Which is essentially what it is now. It's pay for play. You get $40,000 of compensation in the form of a scholarship. And again, this is different than a school being able to say, well, that means you can't make any money off your name, image, and likeness. I think that has to be separate ideas, them being employees and NIL from its like purest definition. That's kind of where I have a problem with it. So kind of where it's at legally now is as you see this progression of you mentioned the NCAA kind of pouting and putting their hands up as they are trying to get an antitrust essentially exemption like Major League Baseball has. Major League Baseball is the only sport that has an antitrust exemption, and a lot of the lawsuits you're seeing are exploiting essentially the fact that this is a giant antitrust violation to essentially forbid scholarships and not allow the free market of people to get what they earned, essentially. And so you're seeing a lot of lawsuits right now that are the biggest one being the Tennessee and Virginia case that's going on right now. It was filed at the beginning of the year. It's still in its very early progressions, where a player from Tennessee, he's there. I think he's going to be their starter this year. He was like a five-star last year, true freshman last year. And he got a 3-year, $8 million thing from the Tennessee NIL Collective that essentially is what the NCAA investigated was them saying is pay for play, which is still under the NCAA rules, despite NIL, paying someone to come play for your team or having a collective to come pay for you is illegal. What these collectives are saying that they're doing, which makes them legal right now, is essentially the idea is they think they see themselves as basically marketing firms where we pay you a certain amount. We pay that NIL right that you didn't have, we now own, and we tell you kind of what ads you can do, and we pay you kind of a salary based off that. But it's in your name of being NIL and not because you went to the school, which is bullshit. Obviously, these collectives wouldn't be called the Volunteer Collective, the Spartan Collective, if they didn't have anything to do with them playing for Michigan State, which is why the NCAA was like, no, this is illegal. And now those collectives are saying, well, that's an antitrust violation. So what's interesting is they were recently in March granted a preliminary injunction, which is a legal way of basically saying that they can't enforce any investigation or they can't enforce anything against those collectives until the case is over. So what's interesting is one of the elements of what determines whether they can grant a preliminary injunction is success on the merits, the likelihood that you are going to succeed in the litigation of this case. So in order to be granted that preliminary injunction, the judge had to say, we think you have a very good case here, which is interesting because obviously they're saying, well, this is an antitrust issue. And now, even more so, while it's on face illegal right now, is now going, everything is all going to be legal. Pay for play is going to be straight up legal, and it's going to even, and it's now even opened up even more, because obviously with the PI they can do it right now, until the unless they were to somehow lose this case. The other one that happened in December, was another preliminary injunction, and this one was arguing the validity of, so the NCAA in the transfer portal era has a, you're allowed one free transfer, and then after that you have to sit out. Again, antitrust issue. The court said no, you can't do that, which now means until that case is over and they lose, the plaintiffs lose, that you can transfer as many times as you want, which kind of opens us up into what NIL is now, is essentially the Wicked Wild West. And that you now, you saw all these schools, like I think of a Michigan State, who invested so much in that football facility right around when Mel Tucker started in 2019 and 2020. And you are now seeing schools, basic, that was kind of the gold standard, right? It was like, we're going to upgrade our facilities for recruits. And you've seen coaches like Lane Kiffin saying, like, I am telling boosters, I am telling collectives that we don't need a new stadium. We need a collective for salaries, essentially. And it's just wide, wide open now. And it's totally changed the landscape. I guess as a fan, from a fan's perspective, I was kind of bullish of like the idea of NIL ruining the sport. I don't think like in its purest form, NIL is going to ruin what makes college football, but what it's become is not that. And I think it, the solution, like I said, is them actually being employees and unionized and having a salary, and to the point where they do just look like minor league sports. And I think part of what makes college football so great is it's something separate from minor league sports, and that's why minor league sports aren't that popular really around the country. And I think, do you really? The more you make them look like pros, the more you dress it up as, specifically in football, like the minors for the NFL. And I think that only hurts the perception of the sport, especially in football moving forward.
Yeah, I guess you kind of got some of your, you get some of the legal points, and I guess what I could have brought to this was a little bit more just maybe an emotional slash kind of logical, the way I think about it, and kind of to go right into what you're saying with the way that it has been implemented. I think it has absolutely killed a lot of people's interest for, and this is the, I'll focus on college basketball and college football because those are the two, the breadwinners of collegiate athletics, but I'm sure it trickles down everywhere. It makes it, the way it's implemented and what it's caused these players to do and the player movement, it's made it tough to care about these teams. And granted, maybe we're not the best examples because at Michigan State, we all know what happened with Mel Tucker, and we all know when there's a new coaching staff, a new regime, you're going to see that exponential turnaround. But you have so much volatility now that A, you don't know who's on your team. B, by the time you figure out who is on your team, it's the end of the season and suddenly they're gone again. And I think you've also, and this is where I kind of, I'm going to kind of flirt with the line of what I said I wasn't earlier, where I think with NIL, you've killed a little bit of the passion. College sports is, to me, has always been magical because you know, you can say, hey, I'm an alumni of this school. You can look back at the wonderful times you had at that place with the friends you made, kind of the connections, kind of where you kind of started kind of growing as an adult and as a human. And it same goes for the players. They can sit there, they committed to a coach, they committed to a university, a location, a climate, a city, whether that be. And I think that with this, of how transactional it's gotten, you've made it into more of a, hey, well, what are you going to do for me now? What are you going to do for me now? What are you going to do for me now? And I do have more, I have some more examples of that. I'll get to that when I get there. But I think to begin with, you've killed a little bit of the emotional ties from the fan perspective, from the player perspective of these collegiate sports. And I know I asked this question to a group chat recently, and it was like, how many players do you still know on Michigan State's roster? And again, we're not the best example. We've been shit for a couple of years now, and we are going through a coaching change. But I sat there and I said, Aiden Childs, Nick Marsh. That's a quarterback that Jonathan Smith brought in and a very highly rated wide receiving recruit. I didn't know anyone else off the top of my head. Now, obviously, when I looked at the roster, I remember some of the names, but I think you've just kind of, I think we've lost cabin pressure with, like, there's player mobility slash player empowerment, and there's just, like you said, Wild Wild West. And now, again, I'll kind of give you some time to kind of talk about what I just said before I get into some other points, but I think they're absolutely lost cabin pressure with kind of what the idea was going to be.
Interesting because again, we started this off by saying we agreed with the principle of what NIL should be in its purest form. And I think that's what the obvious intention was after Alston, but the issue is it's become because different states have different laws. Some have no laws, some have very strict laws still regulating what NIL can be in different states. So that affects. So some of these schools, especially these southern schools, are now making political decisions that are saying, well, if we open up NIL, we're more likely to get the best players in the country. We're more likely that what's that going to bring forward? More economic prowess to these cities, especially a lot of those southern cities don't particularly have professional sports. So that is kind of the big ticket as far as them making money from sports. So now you're making political decisions to pass or not pass NIL regulation behind that, which is only hurting, like, say, maybe states like Michigan who do or are passing NIL laws that hurts and hinders their ability and schools' abilities when it's really not their fault. It's what they're told to do by state law, which is why I think Congress in general will have to at some point address this. I know the NCAA desperately wants them to make some kind of regulation behind formal net federal legislation behind this. The problem is Congress has a lot more better, more important issues to be worrying about than college sports, quite frankly. And they know that. And that's kind of how it's going to be until the scales are just absolutely pushed, until you see an antitrust case in every single court in America, essentially. But that's why it is what it is today. Is there's just you say it's the Wild West and they lost cabin pressure. It's because they just had no ability to get any formal regulation behind it, and it's only led to those in the most favorable position to be able to exploit it at the expense of other schools that can.
And I guess the next thing I was going to kind of go into, like, kind of talk about the kind of the killing of the emotions, kind of what these players have kind of started to take advantage of is, I think it's, I'm almost going to call it extortion. I think Quinn Ewers was kind of the first guy to take advantage of this. He had out of high school, he was the guy who signed the $1 million contract with Ohio State, and it was like, oh my, or I say contract, the NIL deal from Ohio State, and it's like, oh my God, look at this, they're buying him. Sits for a year. Doesn't take a snap, if I remember correctly. I think he sat behind Stroud in 21, maybe 22. I don't remember the exact timeline. And collected his $1 million, took right off, and went down to Texas where he's now played. And I think that there's a lot of players who do that. I mean, Nick Saban talked about it, and was one of the key aspects of why he's retiring is these players are no longer concerned about, oh, how was our season? What did we do? What did we achieve? How can we improve for next year? As soon as the season ends, he said he sat down with players, and the first thing that every single one of them asked was, what's my playing time next year? What's my money next year? Do I need to reevaluate my position at being at the University of Alabama? And you know, that was obviously a big reason for why he called it quits. I mean, you kind of had the Keon Coleman aspect, and granted, I think I've kind of slightly talked myself off the ledge as I've heard him talk more and more, and he just kind of seems like a little bit more of a joker. But in his when he committed from Michigan State to Florida State, in his little, oh, I went up there, I did my jail sentence, I just wanted to prove to people that I could perform in the cold because I'm going to the NFL and I'm super important. And as I've heard him talk more and more, and like you see that, like, he is present at Michigan State events, I don't think he really meant it like that, but there is an extent to that where there are players who sit, they don't care. It's give me money. You've got players, and you have players who sit there and abuse it in the same cycle. It's the season ends, sit there, go to coach, complain about money, get booster to pay you, and then once the winter portal closes, you sit there for 2 months, spring portal opens up in May, bye, after taking money. I think it's ridiculous. You've got.
I have two things to add on what you just said before you go into your next thought. One, this just popped in my head. You mentioned It's just perfect timing with this passing with the generation, and how those kids, I guess you could still probably, they're still our generation, I would say, are raised, was much different than, prior generations as far as the participation trophy era and wanting like everybody get is a winner. I need my NIL because it's all about me, me, me. And that's kind of how a lot of this generation grew up. Well, I also think another hard part, you mentioned this, is like these conversations, the first thing you hear is, what's my NIL? Is Can you blame the players? Like, we again agree with the general
No, yeah,
premise of
I
NIL, and
don't.
it just won't stop because the premise of it is, and if I were in these kids' position, I think it's like 3% of college athletes go to the pros. It's like, well, this could be their only chance to
Yeah.
make money from communities where they otherwise would not have gotten chances to make that kind of money.
Again, I completely agree. I'm not saying they shouldn't be able to do it. I'm just saying this is what's happening. It's
Yeah.
documented with many players. I think you had the Michigan State kid, Harmon, I forget his first name, the defensive tackle, who said, "I'm going into portal," co proceeded to get more money. Suddenly he's back from portal and, "Oh, I love Michigan State. Woo! Yay, go team." Then the next thing I wanted to say, kind of with what NIL's done, is from a competitive aspect. I think when the gap when it was first introduced, these people had this optimistic, idealistic viewpoint that, oh my God, if we buy players, we can disperse the talent. And I remember vividly sitting there saying, "No, you fucking idiot. The only thing you're going to do when you allow players to be bought is give the best programs in America more tools to further the gap. The only thing you're going to do when you allow players to get bought is now when somebody has a great first year at Memphis or Jordan Addison wins the Biletnikoff at Pittsburgh. Hey, we have more money than Pittsburgh. We're gonna come buy you before you're even in the portal." That happens everywhere. And you sit there, and there was obviously the idea of, oh, well, he can make more money at Memphis being the superstar than he can being the fourth stringer at Bama. No, because Memphis doesn't have anybody pouring money into football. And then the other thing is that I think that's funny is, yes, you do have guys who transfer out of the big schools, but they don't transfer out because they wanted to go be the superstar at Memphis. They transferred out because they can't play at an Alabama or Georgia level. And that's when you sit there and you see this transaction of, hey, Duke or Wake Forest, you guys get our scrub, we'll take your star. The big school still wins that swap every single time. And so I think from the competitive aspect, I think you added another tool for the kind of the bigger, the richer programs to kind of flex their muscles on everyone. The same thing is going to happen with college football expand or college football with playoff expansion. You're going to let the bigger, richer programs make some mistakes in the regular season, and then when you see 9-3 Georgia in the playoff and you're 11-1 Penn State, they're going to kick the shit out of you, and you're going to sit there with your thumb up your ass, and you're going to say, "Oh, well, that's not fair." It's like, well, yeah, you wanted this, so you get to deal with it now. As you can tell, this is the, I do get a little frustrated because I think, like I said, I think we've completely lost the plot. This is not the college football that I grew up with, the college sports that I kind of recognize and kind of fell in love with. You want to talk about coaching? I mentioned Saban earlier. This shift of coaches aren't coaches anymore. They're CEOs. It's, how can I recruit? Now I got to recruit you a second time. Now I got to recruit you a third time. Now I got to go recruit the kid I didn't get out of high school the first time because he went to Tennessee instead of my program. Now I got to go tap up him at Tennessee and say, "Hey man, come back over here. Look how cool it is." And you've got coaches leaving, head coaches leaving because they hate it. You have head coaches taking active demotions because they hate it. See Chip Kelly going head coach from UCLA to offensive coordinator at Ohio State because he's like, "Screw it, I don't want to deal with this. Ryan Day, you deal with it. I'm going to coach football." You have guys, head coaches going to the NFL for demotions from head coach to assistant coordinator, if that, with Jeff Hafley going to Green Bay. It's just, they don't want to deal with the bullshit. You, like I said, I mean, you pushed Saban, Coach K, Roy, Jay Wright, and obviously these were not spring chickens. They were gonna have to go eventually, but I absolutely, and they've all kind of noted, this landscape of college sports accelerated my decision to leave. You've killed, I mean, you've kind of, you've killed some of the I don't want to say culture because was it ever really about that? But when these guys are sitting here jumping from program to program, you miss out on certain development, having to sit there and reacquaint yourself with a new coach, a new style, a new format, a new kind of lifestyle, basically, every single year. And it's just, I'll stop. So I'll let you kind of get, because I've kind of ranted for a bit, but I've got more. So I'll give you some year, some time here, and then I'll go off again.
No, I don't really have anything to add to that last comment, dude. I completely agree with you, but again, I go back to I don't think any of the competitive thing is ever gonna change by just like no intervention by like the players or coaches. 'Cause like, can you blame coaches for not wanting to be a part of it? Can you
No.
blame coaches for leaving? Being a part of it. It's the same thing I said earlier with the players. I guess if you had more points, I was going to kind of get to some thoughts I had as far as like what it's going to end up being, what I think could help the situation go into next. I don't know if you've got anything to add before we maybe
I
kind of.
do. I have one more thing to say, and
Okay.
this will lead directly into, like you said, how can we fix this or how can we bring ourselves back down to reality? Because you're right. Right now, I'm sitting here screaming, this is broken, this is broken, this is broken. I have not given a single thought of how to fix it. And I do have ideas, but I want to get to the last thing that I think is absolutely ridiculous. And with NIL, we've talked about the portal, they go hand in hand.
Yep.
The way the portal works is so stupid that on December 5th, the season technically ends for most of America, and the portal opens up. You had teams this year with the bowl, and this doesn't really matter because bowl games have been dead for half a decade, but you had teams who couldn't field the team, you who could not field a 75 man or a 60 man team to send to a bowl game because too many kids from the portal. Texas played without a backup quarterback in the college football playoff because the kid had to get into the portal because he didn't have time to get out or to get in after the season ended. Or after the season would have ended for Texas. So the way the portal has been set up, and I think they're starting to come back on it. When the portal originally opened, kids could jump in whenever they wanted, which how do you think that was ever a good idea? And right now it is you have, I think, 45 days after the end of a season to enter for the first time. And then there is a spring portal which opens up for a second time. And obviously, if you're a grad transfer, none of this applies to you. You can go whenever you want, wherever you want. But it's just, you're sitting there. I mean, with the NIT and with March Madness, obviously there was kind of some talk this past season, I guess a couple months ago now, of a couple of the Big East schools going, oh yeah, well, you didn't put us in March Madness, so we're not going to join your NIT. And it's like, some of them might have did that, but it's also noted that some of them did not have enough players. They had four guys on their roster. You can't go to the NIT with four guys on your roster. Everyone else is in the portal. Their season ended.
It's
Bye.
like Calipari. I spoke to the team. There is no team. Granted, I know that's because the coach left, but you would have never had that situation before where there was regulation behind transferring. That's another one though, where the result of the portal is bad, and for all the reasons you just mentioned, but also like what it was before that needed fixing again. I don't think there's just so many subjective reasons for leaving a school for like a Joey Hauser to have to sit out for a year and a half and miss out on, well, now NIL opportunities, playing opportunities, all of that in the prime of their career, so to speak. But it's impossible to have, I guess, right line rules when those situations are just so subjective and fact by fact cases. And I think this is just essentially the overcorrection for that.
So I've done my complaining. I think we can start getting to the fixes. Where do we want to start? Because obviously this is not a this is you meant just mentioned this is a case by case thing. There is no one shoe fits all, and I think you kind of have to attack certain aspects on their own. So where would you want to start?
I think the first thing, and where basically I focus most of the situation in general is employee status. There's actually a case that went in front of the NLRA with Brown. Was it Brown? It was one of the Ivy League schools. And they were declared by the NLRA to be employees. So they're unionized with all the other student workers. Now, the issue with that is, I think, like, part of being a union and having these, CBAs and stuff like that is being able to have, being able to be a unit in your bargaining power. Unfortunately, with Title IX, with all the sports that they have, and the fact that really only two of them make the schools any money, how is a Caleb Williams going to be in the same unit of a union as the men's volleyball player at Middle Tennessee State? And I think that's going to be the issue moving forward, but they're going to need to be employees, because it kind of goes into my first way I think you solved this, and that's they sign player contracts, so that they have binding terms that say, I'm here for 1 year. You can sign a 1 year, you can sign a 2 year, or you can sign a 4 year. And the issue is, especially since the FTC actually just banned non-competes, because that was also a thought I had, is it's like, and it would be so illegal, actually, to be honest. But who knows if they would be enforced or not? Because non-competes in general are not seen favorably by courts. They're also now illegal by the FTC as of like 10 days ago. So you can't have a non-compete anymore. But I thought that would be a way to, well, if we say you can't go to a school for 6 months, that would at least limit, or, make someone think twice before they go, okay, I'm going to transfer. But at the very least, if you have a player contract and you break it and you want to go somewhere else, you
Give the money
A,
back.
don't get the what?
You give the money back, or yeah, what you
Correct.
broke
Yeah,
the
you don't get the
contract,
you
or you
don't
broke the
get the
contract.
money. Yeah, you don't get the money. And if it's, egregious or willful, then they can sue for,
Yes.
punitive damages against you too. So you could be out of pocket for some of it.
Yeah, I'm glad you
Thoughts on that?
started. Yeah, I that is my biggest thing. I think that opens up so much. I mentioned the emotion thing of you don't know who's on your team. If they sign contracts, yeah, you might not know who some of these guys are as the portal continues to shuffle around, but at least you know how long they're going to be there. There is no, oh, well, yeah, I love Aiden Childs until Aiden Childs has a great year for Michigan State and suddenly he's going to play football down in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Yeah.
And I think part of that is, I do think a union would kind of put some standardness into those contracts, and necessarily maybe could be good, or wouldn't help the top player, but would help most of them as far as the stability, because the school could also breach a contract too if they really wanted to. And the other thing is, and I know you can lose your scholarship if you don't play the sport, but you can be now fired into that. That's another thing that I think players don't realize when they look for employee status, is you're now eligible to be fired and not receive any of that. And what you do receive is now as an employee taxable income.
So I agree with what you're saying, but I think that's just part of that's a job. And like you said, as we move to employee status, actually, I guess maybe I'll start this. Is NIL taxable income right now or no?
Yeah.
Okay, so I guess in that sense, in their eyes, I don't think it really changes from the player's perspective.
True.
But I like what you say. If you are signing a contract and you're an employee, yes, you have some responsibility in your life. And that's the other thing that I know I've kind of banged my head against the wall talking with you, with others, is with NIL right now, there is no responsibility for these guys. It's, oh, let me sign this thing. Let's have some fun. If it doesn't work out, I go play at another school, then another school, and then another school. And you've got certain quarterbacks playing at five schools in 5 years. Shout out JT Daniels.
They're
It's just,
independent contractors right now, essentially.
yes. Yep. And that to me is ridiculous. Like everyone else in the world, like, I mean, even with school, when you go to school and you sign one of those loans, gotta pay it back, man. You gotta have some responsibility in your life. I understand you're the superstar and we've elevated sports to the coolest thing ever growing up, and so many people want to do it, and there's so much attention, and you're the coolest kid in high school, but you're also an adult at this point. You need to have some form of accountability in your life. So I am in 100% agreement. It has to be contracts, and I think that makes it easier for coaches. Now, I no longer have to sit there and re-recruit you 150 times. Oh, you signed a 2-year deal? Cool, go fuck yourself. I'll see you in 24 months if you want to talk about a better deal.
And I think a lot of players would have a problem with that because they're like, well, that like if you give us these standard player contracts, like it limits our bargaining power to make money, right? And I don't necessarily see that as the case because I think they would be negotiated on an individual basis in
Yes.
that like if you're the top shot quarterback, you're going to take a 1-year deal knowing you can get more next year. And yeah,
Yes.
that wouldn't totally solve the roster changeover year when you have superstars going, or if, like, say, I want to go to a mid-major for my freshman year because they offer me just as much money as the Ohio State, but they're willing to sign a 1-year deal instead of a 4-year deal so I can go to Ohio State the next year, then fine. But at least there's, on face some regularity to where now we're not worried about. I think that the top players, the top 1%, will always kind of have that. They'll just have that luxury of bargaining
Yes.
power no matter what the rules are. But at least by having these contracts, the 99 percenters are given stability while also the schools are too, essentially.
I completely agree. And the last thing, and again, this all ties back to contracts. You would kind of have certain periods where this contract would be from date X to date Y, but restructure the portal, man. You cannot have your portal open while the season is still going on. Now, I understand the season's not going on for everybody, but this to me should be a one shoe fits all in the sense of like, hey, I am officially entering the portal. I obviously understand if certain situations happen, you got to get out of somewhere because traumatic experiences, whatever it might be, I get that, but then just leave the school that you're at. But if you want to enter the portal, in my opinion, it should be a national championship happens on January 2nd. January 3rd, portal opens for college football. You've got 30 days to get into the portal. Now, I obviously understand coach mobility happens too. So, like they have right now, there can be a second portal in the spring for when whatever happens, happens. If one of your coaches took left to go get a better opportunity, understandable. It should go both ways. The player should be able to. I've also argued this. If I committed as a player to the running back coach of Ohio State, and I committed, and suddenly he has now turned around and accepted the position at Michigan. I forget the guy whose name who just did that, but I'm going to use that as an example. I should be able to reopen my recruitment, or I should be able to reopen my kind of my commitment, if you will, if you're past the high school stage. And that's kind of where I think the second portal in the spring happens of, hey, there was a coaching change. I would like to find a better fit for me because the new one is not a guy that I dealt with when I decided to come here.
I basically think both of those things you mentioned, as far as the portal itself, and then putting extenuating circumstances where they can, are solvable with, again, player contracts. Like,
Yep.
you're not going to even need a portal if they can't leave without breaching contract. And if you can make these contracts, I think it would be hard for an individual player. It's really hard to negotiate something like if a coach leaves, I get to like I'm out, I get this contract is void. That would be something where a union would have to say like that's a standard player contract term. Because that would have they just an individual player just wouldn't have that negotiating power with a school or an athletic program. But I think that's solvable by just terms of the contract, of terms of what players' contracts could be in college sports. But again, going back to my player, the contracts thing is the only problem I really see with it is I kind of mentioned it earlier. It's like it makes it feel, and then I know this idea of amateurism, it was never really true in a sense that these were people playing for millions of dollars essentially that just weren't getting going to them. But it takes away from the amateur of what the game what's left what was left of the amateurness of the game, and that you have these people now signing essentially professional contracts. It again looks like professional sports, but it's simply just not as good as so like I know it won't because there is such a culture behind it with decades of backing that it just this won't that won't people's impression of that isn't going to change overnight. But how long until you genuinely look at them like the XFL, like the USFL, like the G League? Like how long until because it essentially will be the same thing just with a school affiliated to it.
I'm not going to be able to sit here and give you some rough timeline, but I agree that there will be a point on the horizon when it happens. But unfortunately, that's the world we created when we valued sports as highly as we did, and when we poured as much money into it, especially at the collegiate level. So while I don't agree on the premise of like, hey, this should be a transactional first sport, because like I said, the sport that I grew up with was kind of pageantry first and a little bit more about the university than the player. It's happening, it's going to happen, so rip the band-aid off and just do it.
Anything else you have as far as solutions to this? I think we kind of hit the big points at least.
No, I mean, like, everything does kind of come back into contracts, because contracts are so is I don't know if ambiguous is the right word, but they can be tailored to any situation. So I think that is the easiest thing, and I think that it is what's coming, is hey, you're gonna have some accountability in your life. So
It's interesting because the players obviously want that because it's going to give. I actually think it'll spread out the NIL more across. Well, it won't even be NIL. That's why I said at the beginning is like you have to separate the idea of true NIL from what these contracts would be, which is essentially just a salary to play football, to play a sport, because that's not what. I guess a salary is a form of NIL, but. It's not what NIL is in a general sense, and just the right to be able to profit off your name
yes.
is not what a salary is, so to speak, or a salary is just a faction of that. It wouldn't be it. That's the other thing is like it still wouldn't limit their abilities to like go do ads and go do a Nike shoe deal, right? Like I know there's a big problem now is like I know Caitlin Clark wasn't allowed to do Was it who did she end up signing with for the shoe? I know she wasn't allowed to sign with them as an Iowa player because Iowa was a Nike school and she had to wear the Nike shoes because she was an Iowa player. And then she immediately, I want to say it was Under Armour she signed with. No, or
Was it New
Adidas.
Balance? I might totally be off
I don't
here.
know. It could even be Nike, to be honest, but it was whatever it was a school, it was a brand that what Iowa wasn't. And the only thing holding her back was essentially that Iowa was. A branded school that wouldn't allow her to wear or sign a deal with them, which is another interesting argument. Because that's also probably an antitrust issue, but
Your favorite word of the week, antitrust.
antitrust. That if you want to know anything in sports law, I think understanding antitrust, understanding labor law, and that's and maybe some basic property rights is all you need to know.
I love it. I've got nothing more to say. I know we actually ended up getting a good sized kind of episode out of this. I'm glad, because I think it was a pretty entertaining discussion, and it is something that I've wanted to do for a while now. And as time has gone on, I think it's kind of spiraled and it's gotten worse and worse. So I'm glad we got to it. Hopefully there are fixes on the horizon to kind of bring people's interest back into it. But from myself, thank you for making it this far. And I will say, go antitrust.
So antitrust. Let us know if there's any topics you want us to do in the future. So since we'll have a mixed bag here, since there's just so many playoff games now to really actually deep dive into individual games, that'll change with as we get closer to the finals, but.